Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
Hey, what's up, guys? Ben Standick here. Todd Dybus and I, our pal Todd with the Washington Times, we recorded a podcast before the Wizards game Monday night against the team from the Chinese Basketball Association. We did that because there was a lot going on Monday night after the game. So I wanted to get in a podcast, but I knew we wouldn't have time to really go into this game. And then, of course, we know John Wall. Bradley Beal didn't play that much, so there wasn't a ton to get into. Yeah, well, let me back that up. There were things to discuss, of course, but we'll discuss it more as the week goes on. We've got a gap between their next game on Friday, so more to come. But the Wizards did win. Jody Meeks had a nice game shooting, and they had a lot of guys scoring double figures. So more to come on this, but as I said, Todd Dybus and I recorded a podcast before our first chance to talk with Todd, since the summer. Lots here, but we'll get into more about what happened in the Monday night game as the week goes on. So here we go. Myself, Todd Dybus, talking Wizards here on the Locked On Wizards podcast.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Did you call bank? I call gang.
Gilbert, fade away.
Dagger!
Oh, Arenas
hits the shot at the buzzer.
You believe that.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standing here with you for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. I dragged in some help in the form of Mr. Beef and Bread himself, Todd Dybus. He officially prefers to be say that he writes for the Washington Times. I like to view him as our official Beef and Bread liaison, even though we
connoisseur.
Connoisseur is a better term. I legitimately, if I do nothing else this season, I got to get them as a specific sponsor, even if it's just for you. I don't care about it for me, just for you. I think that would be that would be key.
I can cover the sandwiches. I need them to sponsor the milkshakes. those are expensive in there, but
I have not.
I've heard they're delicious.
I've not had those yet. I typically, when we're at a Wizards, I typically gorge on the bad food here that they have in the media room and don't go outside for that, but milkshake, all right.
And I just said that their milkshakes are typically delicious. It's unclear when I think about it if I've had a bad milkshake in my life, considering the ingredients and the low difficulty of producing said milkshake.
It's a fair point. It's not like you can burn it.
Right.
Unless you're just putting in random kale or something. And to be honest, I've even had that where I've been on some health kick, and this is a terrible way to start this podcast.
This is fascinating.
Well, we're going to get Todd's take on the training camp, the preseason leading up to everything. We'll get to all that in one second. I did the thing where I was taking all the spinach and kale and bananas and blueberries and threw it all into a blender. Even that wasn't terrible. You had to have a sort of 60-40 fruit.
Right,
but even that wasn't awful. So yeah, it's pretty hard.
Still some sugar in there because of the fruit.
I didn't do that from the fruit.
Naturally. Basically, if you puree anything, you can choke it down.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. All right. Well, hopefully you guys are choking down. They're not choking down. I don't know how to say this. Not choking down. This.
Just move on, maybe.
All right. So we're talking. I mean, typically you guys here, especially with Todd, we're talking to you guys after a game. We're actually doing this one before the Wizards are playing. I'm not going to even try to say the name of the team, but the Long Lions from the Chinese Basketball Association. Basically, it's just a timing thing of how it's going to work for me. So we're just going to talk a little bit pregame, and the reality is we already found out no John Wall tonight. Scott Brooks said the starters will only play sort of 10 minutes or so each. It's going to be a lot of the second unit getting runs. Thomas Satoransky starting. Jason Smith is in there for Markieff Morris. There's no Tim Frazier also. No Devin Robinson. So, we're going to get a lot of Satoransky, get a lot of
I guess, Jan Mahimi, Kelly Oubre, sure, and then, of course, Sheldon Mack, Oshefu, and so on. So we'll talk about that as later, but right now we're going to look sort of more bigger picture here because we haven't had Todd on since who knows when. It's been a minute. So first and foremost, I guess, you know, you were down in Richmond as well. You think about this team. You write about this team. What are the things that are on your brain? What's the thing for you as you're getting ready? The season starts in like 16 days, I think.
Yeah.
What's the one thing for you at this point that you're like that sort of is of mind when you think of this team?
It's the same thing as last year. It's the same thing as the year before, but in particular last year. Is there going to be a competent backup point guard discovered at some point to give John Wall a breather and not? I mean, last year was basically a fiasco at that position, especially the Brandon Jennings era of it.
I don't think we've established a proper word. Like, fiasco's harsh. I don't even think it was that good. I mean, when the head coach says that the backup point guard isn't a point guard, which is what he said about Trey Burke. Like, literally, they didn't have one. And then, you know, I wasn't as harsh on Jennings as you, but, like, he certainly in the playoffs was no good. Like, it was
– he shot 18% in the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Yeah, no, it was
not – That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it wasn't good.
And couldn't guard anyone.
I've said this before, and I've been – look, I was somebody who thought Eric Maynor was going to work out, and that was a disaster. I'm in on Tim Frazier. I've always liked his game. Now that he's been around the team, I really like his demeanor. Had him, I guess I could
agreed
also
agreed on the demeanor for sure.
I can also say if you missed it, I posted a one-on-one with Tim Frazier on Monday. Well, I guess it was technically I put up Sunday, but essentially on Monday's podcast, you can find that of course on iTunes or anywhere else you do your podcasting. And I should also say if you want to hit us up on Twitter, it's @BenStandick @Todd_Dibas, or you can email me bstandick1@gmail.com. Yeah, I'm a believer in Tim Frazier. In fact, if they need John Wall to go anywhere this season, let's not pretend when I say that what I'm about to say otherwise. But I think if John Wall was out five games, I think they can get by with Tim Frazier. It's a different type of player. You will miss John Wall, of course, but I think you can get by. Whereas, like, there's some other guys in the starting lineup. I don't know. Like, we'll see what happens at power forward of that Markieff Morris. They don't have an obvious replacement. But I think Tim Frazier is a guy maybe he's not a true starting point guard in this league, but he's a good fill-in. So I believe, but
one thing that was interesting to me about him was looking at how much more of a workload he had last season than he had had in his previous stops. That was by far the most he's played. He's never, unfortunately, going off the top of my head here, I want to say he has not played more than 53 games in an NBA season. So it's going to be interesting to see how long he lasts. And the other thing I've gotten on the bandwagon with our friend Liddell's place, and I don't understand why Satoransky is not just playing point guard. It's not point guard, point guard, point guard. I mean, if you have a lineup where you just want to slide him over and have three ball handlers, then so be it. But to have him kind of continue to waffle, and it seems like that's what Scott Brooks wants him to do, is continue to waffle. He just spent the whole summer playing point guard with the national team. Like, I saw him and we were chatting after media day, and I asked him, you know, I alluded to the thought of him not playing point guard for them, and he laughed. So I find it strange that they're not doing that here. And I understand the versatility, especially with the league that is the way it is now. It is a great thing to have, but, second year, he's way bigger than Tim Frazier. If Tim Frazier is 6'1", then I'm like 6'10", because there's no way he is 6'1", because I'm supposed to be 6'1". The doctor told me I'm 6'1", and then I stand in front of Tim Frazier, and my eyes are like over his head.
Yeah, now that you say that, I didn't feel like I was having to look up to him, and I'm not exactly 6'1".
No.
Not on a good day, even. I'm with you on the Satoransky thing. I mean, I know Liddell's place gets all the hype on the Sato fan club, but, like,
I think he's running for office over there the next cycle.
That would be
fantastic.
And
he's going to win in the landslide.
That would be fantastic. Like, if he can legitimately get, like, his, like, picture in the paper. like an actual thing. That'd be amazing. But yeah, I mean, I've been like waiting for Sato to show up. He comes last year, and look, you expected some amount of adjustment. I'm not surprised that his shot was off. I'm not surprised that defensively he struggled against quicker NBA players. Okay, but it's year two. And to your point, like, you don't want – let somebody establish themselves in one area before you throw them out to six. Now, that's assuming that you think that they can do the one thing. Because if some guys are just like, look, like, you're not really, like, that guy. Like, Garrett Temple was a guy who's played point guard in this league, but they didn't really ever try to establish him as being a point guard. He just was like, hey, guy, he can do stuff, but I can do stuff.
Right.
It almost feels like with Satoransky, just based on how they've handled the point guard, they're like, okay, look, we basically only have, like, 10 minutes a game behind John to play. So what are we doing with those 10 minutes? Like, okay, he's not good enough to be that guy for the 10 minutes. So we have to go get somebody else. But if he still wants to play, then what do we do? If we just have him as a point guard, then he's never going to play. So we need him to figure out how to get on the court in other ways. So I think that's the dilemma that they're in. But, I
think that's fair to a degree. And also if you have him as the quote-unquote three at the same time Frazier's on the floor, then you have, you know, some extra ball handling out there, not just the straight backup point guard handling the ball all the time, you know, off a miss or whatever it may be. Obviously, you pretty much want the same guy getting you into your stuff, you know, when John's off the floor. So, yeah, I like Tim Frazier, like you, personality, smart guy, quick-witted guy, guy who's already, you know, has some friendships here, including John Wall in particular. Before coming here, he's also small. You looked up the what was his? How many games he played last year?
He played 65 last year, and before that, he had only played less than that previously.
Yeah, and he only made 35 starts. So, that's not a major workload.
No, right. I guess he's somebody that I've been paying attention to since Penn State, and I can't remember if he was straight into the D League maybe before. So in my head, it feels like he's played a lot more, but he's only played 127 NBA games.
Right.
But I just know he had a really good year last year. And you know, we'll see. I mean, look, obviously it's going to be key, and obviously part of the key for that is also going to be Jody Meeks, because as bad as the backup point guard spot was last year, I mean, literally they didn't have a backup two guard last year. They shoehorned in Bogdanovich or Otto to those minutes when Beal would sit, but once they realized that Marcus Thornton shouldn't play. So now, at least with Meeks, they have an actual two guard. Of course, the question with him, we've discussed plenty, is can he stay healthy? He's so far so good, but you know,
the question for me about him is, can he guard anyone? So I'm still going to be riding the Sheldon Mack train, or I guess driving the Sheldon Mack train here. You know, just good size, good athleticism, good edge. Certainly not the shooter that Jody Meeks, healthy Jody Meeks is, but can he get into someone? You know, I mean, there are going to be times where they're going to put, you can see them putting Jody Meeks on the floor with Wall and Beal, and then what are you kind of doing with him? You know, if you really want another shooter out there, who is he guarding? Or if, you know, anything happens to Brad, then Jody Meeks is guarding starting shooting guards. For an extended period?
I guess I didn't get the sense that he was like a total liability, but no. I guess the difference from being a plus and not being awful.
Right.
So, yeah. No, it's...
I mean, we've seen them try to bring in numerous guys in the last few years who can shoot, because obviously spacing the floor with the core group that you have is a logical maneuver, right? Gary Neal and et cetera, et cetera, but they can't guard anybody. You know, and I also wonder if you're keeping Sheldon Mack around... Then, are you keeping him around to be the 11th person on your roster the entire time, or are you actually going to deploy this guy at some point and see what you got? So,
no.
I feel like tonight against the Long Lions is an excellent first time to give Sheldon Mack a lot of run out there and see what's happening.
I'm with you. Just to get at least some, I don't know if this really counts as news, but at least something out of today being here, Scott Brooks talk pregame, and among the questions he was asked involved sort of the end of the bench guys. He was asked a little bit about Donald Sloan, a guy who realistically shouldn't be viewed as somebody who's going to be on this team for the opening night. But Scott Brooks talked him up, said he's, you know, a good player, likes his competitiveness, things like that. But he said he has a legitimate chance to make the team. And I've been told the other day down when I was at Richmond that the idea of that the 15 spots are locked is probably premature. I think so. I'll lay out the scenarios. You tell me which one.
I was gonna say, which of the 15 are we gonna say are not locked? It would seem that like 13 of those are locked, right?
13 are locked because they have guaranteed contracts. Mm-hmm. That includes Chris McCullough. And I don't know if you're excited about Chris McCullough. I would say pump the brakes on that one. But anyway, he's got the athleticism, but it's not there right now. So Sheldon Mack and Daniel LeSchefu have small guarantees, mm-hmm. so they could easily be moved. Then you've got Donald Sloan. Then you've got Carrick Felix. You also have the idea that they don't have to keep anybody. They could, or I should say, they can keep one spot open.
Right.
And that was an idea that I was told is still in play. And I asked Brooks pregame about the fact that, okay, last year you kept three rookies, LeSchefu, Mack, and House, because you didn't, and there was no such thing as a two-way player. Well, now you have the two-way player. By the way, Brooks also said that Michael Young has looked really good. Maybe he makes the team. So the fact that you have those two guys, does that give a guy like Sloan more of a chance, or Carrick Felix a chance that maybe a year ago you wouldn't have had, where they seemingly went for that? Made their own minor league system without it. So there's lots of scenarios, but I mean, what stands out to you? If I tell you got to pick the 15th player, is it Mack? Is it LeSchefu? Is it Donald Sloan? Is it Felix? Is it Michael Young? Is it keep nobody?
For me, I think the first person I would eliminate from that pool is LeSchefu, because I don't see what is the point of having him strictly based on position if Mahimi's healthy. Like, you're already bogged down with two true centers in a league that doesn't want to use true centers anymore, and so you want a third true center?
It, at least in the limited, like when
25% of your roster would be true centers.
Totally agree. At least when I watch him in shoot around and things like that,
makes threes.
He does go often. Outside.
Absolutely, he does. Whether he could do that in an actual NBA game,
right?
Distinctly different for me. Chris McCullough, I have large concerns about what he can do on the floor in an actual game. I would say he strikes me as a coming off the bus type versus someone who gets it done when the ball is tossed up. So we'll see his fate's going to be interesting, because he is the last referendum on the Bogdanovich deal, which is already looking worse and worse, right? So if they get nothing out of McCullough, then all you got was the Bogdanovich rental, and it cost you a first-round pick. You had to dump Nicholson's contract. Go get him in China, Andrew. And you got McCullough back.
How much money?
And nobody's going to be here at the start of the next season, quite possibly.
But wait, hold on. The long lines. The player that they have that we all know is Tyler Hansbrough.
Mm-hmm.
How much money would you donate to have that player, instead of being Tyler Hansbrough, be Andrew Nicholson?
That would be hysterical this evening to see that. All I know is that Tyler Hansbrough and Jason Smith are probably going to engage each other at some point tonight, and it's going to be like rock and sock and robots. I expect some blood to be drawn, maybe some comments the style of Drago, you know, and the whole thing could be a preseason disaster, and it's going to be fantastic.
You are the unofficial boxing analyst for the Locked On Wizards podcast, so if it comes to that, we may have to have you back on later to give the blow-by-blow.
Yeah, we'll be scoring Jason Smith, Tyler Hansbrough on the 10-point must system.
but, yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, Donald Sloan, I mean, not saying he couldn't be in the league or whatever, but, you know, viewing Satoransky as a point guard, well, then he's the fourth point guard. And at some point, that just becomes too much, especially when the number one point guard is going to play all your minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So that just seems too much. Even if Michael Young is great, I just don't get what would be the point of him sitting on the bench? You might as well just stay as the two-way guy.
Agreed.
You already went down this route. By the way, on the Devin Robinson thing, I mean, you tell me if I missed this. I know he was dealing with a foot injury.
Right.
They've got a list here, stress fracture left foot. Doesn't that sound more severe than what we were told?
I felt like in Richmond it was just like, it's a foot thing, yeah. blah, blah, blah.
So stress fracture left foot, so who knows when he'll be back, which is a thing. Carrick Felix, I'll be 100% honest. I just haven't seen enough. We'll get a chance tonight to see what he can do.
I covered a couple of college games of his, if I remember correctly, at ASU. Kyle Fogg as well.
Wow.
Who is playing for the Long Lions this evening.
Yes, yes. So, I don't know. To me, I would either say...
And Sloan. Texas A&M game.
Wow, yeah. Look at you.
University of Washington had a home away home with Texas A&M.
Look at that. Who knew? We'll have to get more about Todd's life on this podcast. So is a...
Nope.
Oh, no, come on. That's a good, she's like, yeah, Todd tidbit. What? Tell us one thing about your life that we don't know. Now we got that. You've got for Donald Sloan and Carrick Felix. So, to me, it would either be stay the same or go with a 14. And I only say go with a 14 as sort of like, well, keep it open and see what happens. I'm not saying that's like ideal. I mean, hey, spend the money. I mean, why not? But, I mean,
right. The thing is, they have no financial flexibility anyway. So you're the if you leave it open, and I agree with you, either go with 15 or leave a spot. But just that spot, what is that spot going to become, considering your lack of financial flexibility? You know.
Well, I mean, you have because you have you can play with, and if assuming Robinson is back soon, you can bring those guys up. They only the deal is they can only be up for 45 days over the course of the year.
Right.
But at least then you have the spot. I mean, otherwise it's hard to see like how much it would take for either one of them to get up, even with Markieff Morris out.
Sure.
I mean, they wouldn't be playing, so it's hard to see like why would they ever play. But yeah, anyway, I mean, hopefully they use the spot. I prefer they, you know, whatever spots they give you, use them. But I would. At this moment, I would be just surprised if it's Donald Sloan or Carrick Felix. I did ask Brooks. Again, curious what you think. I was like, do you think it gives a veteran a better chance this year because you have the two-way guys, whereas last year, seemingly, you wanted to go with younger players, even though they just didn't play all year. Does it give a guy like Sloan and Felix a better chance to make the team because you already have your minor leaguers over here? Hmm. He's like, yeah, that's a great question, and then proceeded to not really give me much of an answer on that. But, you know, I think that would be maybe the one thing to give Sloan and Felix a chance, that we already got those dudes. And if Sheldon Mack's the 14th guy, then that's three just like you had a year ago, but now you can use this one spot to have a veteran just in case.
Yeah, in case of emergency break class situation. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I would say this, that we're talking about that spot tells us where we are with the team, right? You know, we're not in this stage of a few years ago of, so they have Wall, Beal still hurt and hardly playing. What is Otto going to be? Gortat's here. Nene's here, you know, and what the hell else is going on down the line? So I think that's interesting and speaks volumes to where they are.
I mean, the Markieff thing is, and I guess let me mention this also here, because Todd also, not only is he the boxing authority on the podcast, but he's also our legal scholar. So, like, Brooks, you know, I realized this the other day. I wasn't in Richmond every day. I didn't get the sense that anybody even asked Brooks about the Markieff legal situation. Today it came up only in the sense he was asked, when does he think Morris will be back? And he said, well, I don't know. He's still got the trial ongoing. And then I asked him about, you know, how often he's been talking to him. He said they've been texting for the last month, but he's trying not to bother him on a daily basis because clearly there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. From what I read, the lawyers on both sides wrapped up the case on Thursday, and now I guess it's with the jury as of we're talking right before tip-off on Monday. I haven't heard anything today, so presumably this will go, I would assume it would be ending sooner than later.
There's a timeline laid out. If the Maricopa County court system lays out a timeline for the jury to render a verdict, and then there's a separate timeline for sentencing. So this could still be another 2 weeks, even though the lawyers are done. And so you have that. We saw a tweet today also that Marcus Morris has a trainer out there with him. He's working out every day because he's away from the Celtics while still dealing with this. So for the longest, the reason the Morris twins are finally out there is because this has been going for 2 years. And they had previously waived their right to make an appearance in the court. And so, but now when push really came to shove, they're out there now when you're getting to this point where a jury's going to render a verdict and then there will be sentencing. So on top of that, specific to the Wizards, it's a concern is if something happens, even if he just gets probation, does the league hit him with 10 games for this? And those 10 games are going to come after they're sure he's healthy, because the league will send an independent doctor down to make sure you're not saying he's healthy. He's healthy now, but we just decided to bench him for 5 games in a row,
right?
You know, type of healthy. So the league sends an independent doctor down. He'll assess that Morris is indeed healthy to play in an NBA level game. If that's the case, then his suspension could start if there was going to be a suspension. So now you're talking about 18 to 25 game range that he could miss, considering the timeline for the recovery from the surgery plus a possible suspension. So that's a large chunk of the season.
And that goes back to my point from earlier. Like I said, if Beal was out or Wall was out, between Jody Meeks, Frazier, I feel like they could figure something out that could get you by for a little bit. Jason Smith is starting tonight. I don't think I'm viewing that Jason Smith as a viable replacement, a viable starting power forward for an extended time. But he still may be the best thing they have. So
that's why Mike Scott will also be interesting in these few preseason games here. What version of Mike Scott are we looking at here? The one that was just a mess personally and professionally last year, or the one who a couple of years ago we saw him with the Hawks in the playoffs, and I was like, ooh, this guy's going to have a future 3-and-D athletic guy with a bit of an edge to him.
I watched him pregame. He went to figure out how to go out to the court for a shoot around, but he's used to being here as a visitor, so he was going the visitor way, and everybody had to like,
down
stop.
The hall.
They're going down the long way. I was like, no, go this way. So, another guy to keep an eye on tonight. All right, well, good. Look, you weren't rusty. You came back strong. Good job. Thank you guys for listening. Again, if you haven't already, but presumably you have, but hit the subscribe button on iTunes. The podcasts are coming fast and furious. I don't want you to miss any of them. Do that. We'll back with another one tomorrow with some thoughts on the actual game. And until then, see ya.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Home drive, low-power shot.
Dagger!